his good wishes, I can say something. Thank you. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Vihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Gidavarid Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Gidavarid Hari. Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanacha. Yamuna Tira Vanachahari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kuncha Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvajakachara Sotera Sajashri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Samavet Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to the simple devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devam Gaura Vanagacharne Nirvishesha Shunya Hari Pascha Chari Sitarane. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Texts 8 and 9. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll just read through text 8 and we'll chant responsibly text 9 since that's the one I'll probably concentrate the most on speaking about. The text 8, Devarta Uttama Shlokam Tantu Tanva Patrinya Jait Raksha Kama Punyan Jana Ojas Kama Marud Ganan. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. One should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotee for spiritual advancement and knowledge and for the protection of heredity and the advancement of a dynasty. One should worship the various demigods. Purport. The path of religion entails making progress on the path of spiritual advancement, ultimately reviving the eternal relation with Lord Vishnu in his impersonal effulgence, his localized Paramatma feature, and ultimately his personal feature by spiritual advancement and knowledge. And one who wants to establish a good dynasty and be happy in the progress of temporary bodily relations should take shelter of the Pitas and the demigods and other pious planets. Such different classes of worshippers of different demigods may ultimately reach the respective planets of those demigods within the universe, but he who reaches the spiritual planets in the Brahmajyoti achieves the highest perfection. Text 9, chant. Raja Kamo Manundevan Niritam Niritim Vabicharan Yajet. Kama kamo yajet somam. Akama purusham param. Rajakamo manundevan. Niritim tvabicharan yajet. Kama kamo yajet somam. Akama purusham param. Rajakamo manundevan. Nirutvam tvabicharan yajet. Kama kamo yajet somam. Akama purusham param. Rajakama. Anyone desiring an empire or kingdom? Manun. The Manus, semi-incarnations of God. Devan. Demigods. Niritim. Demons. Two. But. Abhicharan. Desiring victory over the enemy. Yajet. Should worship. Kama, kama, one who desires sense gratification. Yajet, should worship. Somam, the demigod named Chandra. Akama, one who has no material desire to be fulfilled. Purusham, the supreme personality of Godhead. Param, the Supreme. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. For a liberated person, all the enjoyments listed above are considered to be absolutely useless. Only those who are conditioned by the material modes of external energy are captivated by different types of material enjoyment. In other words, the transcendentalist has no material desires to be fulfilled, whereas the materialist has all types of desires to be fulfilled. The Lord has proclaimed that the materialists who desire material enjoyment and thus seek the favor of different demigods, as above mentioned, are not in control of their senses, and so give themselves to nonsense. One should therefore not desire any sort of material enjoyment, being sensible enough to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The leaders of nonsensical persons are still more nonsensical because they preach openly and foolishly that one can worship any sort of demigod and get the same result. Yes, Prabhupada tells them. This sort of preaching is not against the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. This sort of preaching is not only against the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita or those of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but is also foolish. Just as it is foolish to claim that with the purchase of any travel ticket, one may reach the same destination. No one can reach Bombay from Delhi by purchasing a ticket for Baroda. It is clearly defined herein that persons impregnated with different desires have different modes of worship. But one who has no desire for material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. And this worshiping process is called devotional service. Pure devotional service means service to the Lord without any tinge of material desires, including desire for fruitive activity and empiric speculation. For fulfillment of material desires, one may worship the Supreme Lord, but the results of such worship is different, as will be explained in the next verse. And of course, tomorrow somebody gets the famous Akama Sarvakamo Vamakshkamo Fidaridi verse. You know, who's giving that class?
Secret.
Secret, okay. Anyway, it's a very, very, very nice verse that somebody gets, so I'll try not to move into that area too much. Okay, the results are different, so let's go to the next verse. Generally, the Lord does not fulfill anyone's material desires for sense enjoyment, but he awards such benedictions to the worshipers of the Lord, where they ultimately come to the point of not desiring material enjoyment. The conclusion is that one must minimize the desires of material enjoyment, and for this, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described here as Param, or beyond anything material. Sri Padshankacharya has also stated, Narayana Purovyaktat, the Supreme Lord is beyond the material encirclement. Om Jnanati Marandasya, Jnananjana Salakaya, Chaksurmitamina, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Panchako Patribhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhyevacha, Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Prabhupada. In reading these last few verses, and of course all yesterday's verses, and all the different methods of worship and ways that people can approach spiritual knowledge, material benefit, whatever, reminded me of an old saying, and I actually tried to look this up and the attribution. I thought it was biblical, but I'm not sure if anyone's ever heard it. Anyway, it's beware that which one most earnestly desires, for that one will surely receive. So as we can see, Krishna rewards desires of so many people in so many different ways of worship or whatever it may be, but you may or may not actually like the result. It may not be what's really going to be ultimately beneficial to the self. So in these two verses, Krishna and Srila Prabhupada explain the various types of worship and how they do give different results. And of course, we've had a lot of discussion, a lot of these verses have talked about that one who's desiring enjoyment or anything in the material world, any sense gratification, whatever it might be, should worship the demigods. And that was nicely covered in yesterday's class. We learned all about the 33 principal demigods. And, you know, at any rate, so we don't need to cover that territory, which Trevor Crown so nicely discussed yesterday. So anyway, and of course, as he pointed out, the Bhagavad Gita progressively takes us to higher and higher realization, and then in later chapters, Krishna is totally rejecting the idea of worship the demigods, saying that, you know, people of less intelligence do this. You know, so, not a good thing to do. Now, it's not just the worship of the demigods, I mean, it's not something they do over in India or something, but there are many philosophies, many Western philosophies, you know, that are also purporting this by your efforts, you can get what you want. In other words, I can worship the demigods to get what I want, or I can do other processes or other systems. Now in India, of course, we have the Karma Mimamsa philosophy that's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Krishna book in the story of the lifting of Govardhan Hill. and where Krishna is trying to convince Nanda Maharaj not to perform the worship to Indra, and he gives, actually, I think, four or five different philosophies that are discussed there. And Krishna actually expounds this karma mimamsa philosophy, which is totally untrue, you know, which is basically that, you know, hard work will get you the result. If there are demigods, they are obligated to reward your efforts. So you don't need to worship the demigod, you don't need to worship anybody, because it's kind of a mechanical process of karma that you get whatever, you know, whatever you put in, whatever action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And I remember in one of those purports, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says this karma mimamsa philosophy, says it's basically atheism with karma added. That's about it. So not much there really of any depth. But also the Western versions have many materialistic ideas. We've all heard your, you know, positive thinking, affirmations, whatever you put out there in the universe, that's going to come back to you, right? You know, just think hard about it, or have a strong work ethic, and you know you're going to be rewarded in the end, by any efforts that you make. And the feature of all of these is that there's no conception of worship or relying upon something greater outside ourselves, and those results are going to be automatic or mechanical. And even Christianity, which obviously believes in there's a higher being, there's a supreme being. Some of them, and I'm not saying all, but some of them have got into these ideas we call prosperity gospel or prosperity theology. And you see this in some of the mega churches, those ones that, you know, draw tens of thousands of people. And a lot of their appeal is quite materialistic, honestly, because one of the things prosperity gospel teaches is God, if God wants you to be wealthy, and the fact that you are wealthy is a sign of your faith and a sign that God has favored you. Now, there's a little truth to that, because it means that you've had some good karma by something you've done to gain that wealth. But it certainly does not necessarily mean that God is particularly favoring you, and that's what he wants, for you to be wealthy. And of course, the detractors, many more traditional Christians, they criticize this. They call this a deviation, and so it's not exactly mainstream theology, but it's very, very popular. They draw thousands and thousands of people to this idea that, you know, it's not a matter of your faith or your devotion or that. It's really just a matter of, you know, I put it out there, and God gives it to me. Now, ultimately, well, yeah, he gives it to you. Now, this idea that you get the same results whatever you do, of course, is Prabhupada has discussed many times, you know, and he describes it here, that people think that, you know, whatever you do, you're going to get the result from it. There was a room conversation with a professor and some other devotees, I forget which year it was, and Prabhupada, they were discussing Ramakrishna and Ramakrishna's influence. And Prabhupada was talking about it, and then he says, you know, that one we've heard many times, they say many paths, many ways, yatapata, matapata. Apparently this was spoken by Ramakrishna, at least he was one of the people that expounded that idea. And which basically is saying, you know, many paths, whatever you do, maybe we all have a different path, a different way, so, you know, just go for that. Of course, Prabhupada also mentioned in that conversation that Ramakrishna worshipped Kali. Someone else said he dressed as Radharani, and then he thought he became not just Krishna, but Rama and Krishna together. So then he says, yeah, yatapata matapata, and you can achieve this too. You can all become God, you know, by whatever method you choose, you know, whether it's worshiping Kali or whatever. Now, there's a basic problem with this philosophy, and that basic problem is very simple. It's not true. It is simply not true. Srila Prabhupada discusses in the purport we just read, says the leaders of nonsensical persons are still more nonsensical because they preach openly and foolishly that one can worship any form of demigod and get the same result. Now that's pretty straightforward, and but you can see that, you know, that how Prabhupada felt about, you know, the leaders who are even more nonsensical, more foolish, that they are propagating this idea, sort of deceiving people, leading them down the wrong path, that, oh, you can worship this demigod or whatever demigod. And of course, this is very popular. In fact, I've heard even talk to certain people who happen to be born in India, but I'm sure you can find this kind of idea anywhere. You know, say, oh yes, we worship all the gods. You know, they want to cover all the bases, make sure that they've got it. And there's the, what's the popular, in India, often there's this popular system of worshiping five primary demigods, right?
By Lord Shankaracharya.
Yeah.
Panchopasana.
So in other words, you kind of cover everything and worship all of them, But so, you have to have the right path and you have to have the right destination. If you don't know where you're going, you're not going to end up in the right place. And Srila Prabhupada says in this, it's foolish to claim that with the purchase of any travel ticket, one may reach the same destination. No one can reach Bombay from Delhi by purchasing a ticket for Baroda. You know, I love that analogy in its simplicity, right? It just states it very simple. You think that you can go here, reach perfection, become self-realized, and you just pick any path. But no, just like you can't get the plane ticket to the wrong city, you're not going to end up in that destination. So, all of this demigod worship and personal meditation, yoga, breathing, asanas, so many different practices, they're not going to bring spiritual perfection, particularly in Kali Yuga. Now, there may have been some of these processes, and they are given in our scriptures, that have some legitimacy, because there are certain paths that do lead to at least spiritual advancement and progressive, progress on the spiritual path towards perfection. But they are so difficult, and they are not recommended for this age of Kali. Because not only do you have to have the right ticket to Bombay, you can't get the ticket to Baroda, but you also have to choose the right transportation. So you can take a non-stop flight, probably get you there in 2 hours, right? Yeah. I fly internally in India, go up to Delhi, Calcutta, Bombay. It's about 2 hours each way. It's kind of like a triangle. Not bad. It's a non-stop flight. But try taking a bus or a train in India, one of those routes, right? How many stops do you think there would be between the cities? Dozens and dozens, right? Some of you may have done it. Have you done that, Prime? No. You stayed away from that because you knew better. There's a person of intelligence. He wants to take the non-stop flight. So, anyway, what happens? So many places along the way, so many stops, you're not sure where you're going, and what happened, now taking the analogy back to one spiritual path, people become distracted. They get off at one of those stops, perhaps, and think, oh, is this the right place? And it's not. You're out in the middle of, the Rajasthani desert or something. And or they give up. Because it seems so long, so arduous, and this happens with many people, doesn't it? They start some spiritual path, and then 2 years later, they say, oh, I'm not doing that anymore. Why? Because they didn't get any real taste, they didn't get any real benefit, and they didn't get any real sense of progress. So I think we all know people, I know some of my relatives, people, they go from one spiritual path to another. They try out different things. It's like dabbling in spiritual life. And of course, they need to take the direct route. But why are they doing this? Because they have no guidance. We cannot figure these things out ourselves. There has to be the guidance of the spiritual master. So, and the scriptures. Krishna spells out in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the process of self-realization? And Srila Prabhupada not only has translated and given us the commentaries that really help us, not only help us, they're absolutely essential to go forward in their spiritual life. So, Prabhupada often explained, you can become diverted in so many ways, but just take the direct route. And one of the examples that he often gave was, you go to a skyscraper, he always called them skyscrapers, right? Or skyscrapers, sometimes he said. These buildings, 100 stories up. 100 stories, you want to go to the top. Now, there's a stairway, that you can climb up hundreds of flights of stairs, or there's an elevator. Unless you just really need the exercise. Most intelligent people are going to take the elevator. So it's the same way. He called it sometimes the yoga ladder. You can climb all of these processes, jnana yoga, karma yoga, et cetera, with worship of demigods. Climbing slowly up the stairs or slowly up the ladder, or you can take the elevator. You can take the express to the top floor. So, Srila Prabhupada says here, one who has no desire for material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. And this worshiping process is called devotional service. Now, of course, I'll get to more of this a little bit later, but this explains, part of the thing is one has to have that desire for no material enjoyment, and that's kind of the catch, and that's why so many people get diverted on these other paths. So, there's a really nice example, or it's almost an allegory. I like this, I found that Srila Prabhupada gives in Renunciation Through Wisdom. He says, the living entities are like sons of the Lord, and as such they are the rightful heirs to the great wealth of the rich father. But because of reactions to sins committed in previous lives, they are roaming about without a home, suffering acute poverty. That the living entities are suffering is quite clear to all, but they do not know who their wealthy father is or where they can go to reclaim their valuable inheritance. Without proper knowledge, they are trying in vain to escape from their poverty while aimlessly roaming about like poor beggars. That's the people climbing the stairs. They meet many who promise to help them, but in the end, such helpers turn out to be beggars themselves. These are some of the, right, some of the fools, or what do you call them? Anyway, some of the foolish people trying to help other foolish people. The directions they give do not lead to the Father's house. No, wait. But in the end, such helpers turn out to be beggars themselves. A few among these strangers seem rich and prosperous, but the directions they give do not lead to the Father's house, and so the living entity's poverty knows no end. The wealthy strangers suggest many paths like karma, jnana, or jhana, but the problem of poverty remains unsolved. The living entity can escape their poverty only by learning and practicing the science of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. So I think all the analogies are pretty obvious in this, you know, that we wander around, different people give different advice, none of it leads us to the real destination. So one more who is more advanced realizes all these other paths are basically meant to fulfill material desires. So they say in the Vedas that they categorize these as the Chatur Purushas, the four goals of life, Artha Kama, Dharma, Moksha, economic development, sense gratification, Dharma, which is actually meant to gain economic development, sense gratification. And when one finally just gets exhausted from all that, Moksha. I try to become liberated. And of course, our scriptures, well, Sridhar Swami in a purport of Bhagavatam says, the four parashas are no more important than a blade of grass, and all the results can automatically be achieved through bhakti. Now, there's another purusharta, and that's the fifth goal of life, pure love of God. Srila Prabhupada in the purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ansha 724, says, purusharta, the goal of life, generally refers to religion, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and final liberation. However, above these four kinds of purusharthas, love of Godhead stands supreme. It is called Parama Purusharta, the supreme goal of life, or Purusharta Shiromani, the most exalted of all purusharthas, and in the word-for-word translation of this verse, Prabhupada actually translates Shiromani as the crown jewel. So, Krishna Prema is the crown jewel of all goals of life. Lord Krishna is worshipped by regulative devotional service, but the highest perfection of devotional service is spontaneous love of Godhead. It's also called Krishna Premadana, the treasure of the love of God. It's so exalted to be considered the fifth goal of human life, also from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think another point here is that the results all mentioned are not a mechanical response to one's process. We've kind of discussed that. But it's not just one worships a demigod and one gets this, one does that. It has to be sanctioned by the Lord. In other words, it doesn't just happen automatically. It's also important to understand that it's based on the desires of a living entity. So whatever results we get and how Krishna rewards us is based upon our desires and, of course, our practice. Prabhupada said, first desire, then deserve. So desire and deserve. In other words, it's about our desires, what we want, And Krishna will help fulfill that. But we also have to deserve it. In other words, and that's what sadhana bhakti does us. It gives us the practice by which Krishna recognizes us and then fulfills those desires for spiritual life. So why is desire important? Krishna fulfills the desires of every living entity. Whatever you strongly desire, Krishna will help fulfill that. And thus the quotation I read in the beginning, beware that which one most strongly desires, that one will surely achieve. So we want to make sure that our desires are really in line with the ultimate goal. In other words, we have so many desires, but we also have a sort of higher goal. You know, just like the Purusha, there's always this fifth goal, the highest goal of life. And that's always there. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says, I should have looked this up, but it's at one point, he says, the important thing with a devotee, I've mentioned this before, is that our desires for Krishna are stronger than our desires for material life. So in other words, yes, we still have material desires, but beneath it all, I mean, the strongest desire is really for Krishna. That's why we're in this mood. That's why we're Krishna conscious. That's why we're doing what we're doing. Because that internal desire of the soul is predominating. So Krishna directly states this idea of rewarding according to one's desires. Of course, Bhagavad Gita 4.11, yayatamam prapajjante tam sthitayapa bhajamiham mama vartman avartante manushya partasarvasha. As all surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. And I want to read some of this purport, Srila Prabhupada. Everyone is searching for Krishna in different aspects of his manifestation, whether it's realized in his impersonal Brahma-jyoti or the all-pervading super-soul. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. Then Prabhupada explains the different rasas, however, whether one wants to be a son, a friend, whatever. In the material world, the same reciprocation of feelings are there, equally exchanged by the Lord with different type of worshipers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. I think it's interesting because Prabhupada says that the pure devotees are serving Krishna and seeing Krishna both here and in the spiritual world. So of course, when one is in Goloka or Gokula, one experiences Krishna in person. And this is described sometimes as Krishna's prakriti and aprakriti manifestations. I always thought that was an interesting word, because doesn't prakriti mean manifestation? You know, or aprakriti means unmanifest, so it's this unmanifest manifestation. Interesting. But anyway, the spirit soul, eventually, will experience Krishna in Goloka, in the spiritual world, and also in Gokula, when he descends on into this material world, like he did 5,000 years ago. That was seeing Krishna in person. The devotee's there, face to face, just like we see each other. And he assumes what they call a human-like form, which is a reflection. Obviously, it's his original form, but he looks like a human being, acts like a material. Actually, it's even described that, you know, he'll be perspiring. But some of our acharyas have explained, he doesn't really perspire. He doesn't have a material body, but he can manifest symptoms like that for his pastimes, to enhance his human-like attributes for his devotees there. But Krishna's also experienced within. This is the aprakriti manifestation. And just like they say, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, or Krishna's always in Vrindavan, some fortunate devotees may have experienced Krishna in Vrindavan, if one is quite advanced. Yeah, but Krishna's always there. He's performing his pastimes eternally. Remind me of something else, which is a little off topic. But so Krishna's experienced by the pure devotees within and without. So we might ask, after all this, how will I achieve spiritual success, perfection, and Krishna consciousness? Because if Krishna rewards all desires and he rewards my material desires, how will I make progress? And that is because Krishna gives us understanding and direction from within how to advance. Bhagavad Gita 10:10 says, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So within, Krishna, as Super Soul, is guiding all of his devotees. All of his devotees to come to him more and more. And he protects us. He protects us from our own material desires if we have a strong desire to actually achieve him. For instance, in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:81-37, this is a chapter called Blessings to Sadama Brahman. And Sadama Brahman, of course, after he regained this immense wealth, kingly wealth, he and his wife were completely elevated materially. He was concerned because he was a pure devotee. He says, I don't want to be distracted by this wealth. You know, I don't know if I want this. And it was explained, to a devotee who lacks spiritual insight, the Supreme Lord will not grant the wonderful opulences of this world, kingly power, material assets. Indeed, in his infinite wisdom, the unborn Lord well knows how the intoxication of pride can cause downfall of the wealthy. But he did, of course, tell Sadama Brahma that he totally protected him because he was a pure devotee. He didn't have to worry about that. You know, just enjoy this now and then come back to me in the spiritual world. So, kind of got the best of both worlds, Sadama. But he suffered great austerities for many, many years, he and his wife. We have to remember that. You know, always serving Krishna and being a completely pure devotee, a friend of Krishna. So for a devotee, Krishna gives what is beneficial for our service. And this is a long one, but it's a goodie, an oldie but goodie, you could say, from Majjhalila 22:39-42. Krishna says, if one engages in my material, in my transcendental loving service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is very, very foolish. He's like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. Since I am very intelligent, Krishna says, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desire, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not hoard anything that, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, for one will forget other desires. When someone engages in Lord Krishna's devotional service for the satisfaction of the senses, and instead acquires a taste for serving Krishna, he gives up those material desires and willingly offers himself as the eternal servant of Krishna. So, in other words, this again, how Krishna is step by step bringing us to him. Okay, I may give you that material desire, but not in such a way that you'll continue material desires, continue to petition me. So he works in such a way to discourage our material desires, actually, and bring us more and more to pure spiritual desire. And as is indicated here at the end, by getting that taste of spiritual life, the taste of our relationship with Krishna, the material desires seem meaningless. And he tend to fall away, you know. But that falling away comes from our activating our relationship with Krishna, at least the beginning of that. So attaining pure devotion is through the practice of bhakti. Bhakti, the means and the ends are the same. We attain pure bhakti by performing bhakti. And in Bhagavad Gita 11:54, Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I, understood as I am, standing before you, and thus can be seen directly. Only this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. Now, he talks about unflinching devotion. But the key here is not that one has to first be pure to gain the guidance of Krishna. In other words, devotion is important, that one has firm faith. If that faith is there, then Krishna continues to help us along. He continues to guide us from within and without. Svetashvatara Upanishads, only those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So that faith, again, we hear this over and over, but that faith is so important. If we have that strong faith, that strong desire in Krishna consciousness, faith in the Guru, faith in Krishna, then all knowledge is automatically revealed, right? So, when we start to become pure, we're able to experience Krishna more and more, both within and without. And of course, we have 7-8, Bhagavad Gita, I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, the syllable Om and Vedic mantras, the sound and ether and ability in man. So, especially in the little book on the way to Krishna, in chapter 3, it's called Seeing Krishna Everywhere and Always. And Prabhupada explains this. He explains that whatever we see, whatever we experience in this world, the devotee associates that with Krishna. And he says it begins with hearing. And he says, inasmuch as we associate with God and going hearing the words of Krishna, his names, the contamination material nature is reduced. And it becomes, in understanding that Krishna is sound, illumination, water, and so many other things, it becomes impossible to avoid Krishna. If we can remember Krishna in this way, our association with him is permanent. So it's a practice. And it's also not just external. There's also the practice in developing our bhakti for Krishna internally. You know, so in other words, in some ways, yes, it comes about automatically. Prabhupada's explained that, how sadhana bhakti, when it's performed, well, sadhana bhakti is the two parts, vaidhi bhakti and raganuga bhakti. And when vaidhi is performed very well, very sincerely, then raganuga, or more spontaneous devotional service, begins. It starts to develop within us. But then it's not that it's a different practice. As explained, the practice of raganuga, it's still part of sadhana, it's the same practice. It's just that it becomes more spontaneous, one is experiencing more happiness, joy, you know, wanting to do the process of hearing, chanting, and remembering. You know, so, 11.21.14 says, the self can be cleansed, which is what we're trying to do, through bathing, charity, austerity, personal strength, purificatory rituals, prescribed duties, but above all, remembrance of me. So that's part of what Prabhupada is talking about in his prayer to those Bhagavad Gita verses. It all helps us to remember Krishna. Whatever we do, whatever we see, whatever, you know, always be worshiping Krishna. And of course, one more, 1.2.15, Bhagavatam, with sword in hand, intelligent men cut through the binding knot of reactionary work karma by remembering the personality of Godhead. Therefore, who will not pay attention to his message? And Prabhupada says, this liberation automatically follows one who constantly remembers the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead. So this is a process, hearing, chanting, and then remembering. So we try to remember Krishna everywhere, however we can, having more and more part of our life. And I think that's something that as we, you know, as we advance a little bit and then doing Krishna consciousness for 30, 40, 50 years, 60 years, some people, you understand that it has to be both an internal process and an external process. Of course, it's never really an external process because we're talking about the spiritual energy. And anything that you're doing associating with the spiritual energy, we're just chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna is not different than his name. That sound vibration is spiritual energy. So when I say external, I guess it means more our consciousness. It's a difference of consciousness. And of course, that consciousness becomes more and more purified as Prabhupada is describing how the contaminations, the knot of material bondage start to dissolve. Then that internal understanding and experience and appreciation of Krishna can develop more and more. So there is a practice, in a sense, that one tries to focus more on actually remembering. First, hearing very nicely, hearing our japa nicely, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and chanting around very nicely, which all chanting and hearing are very closely connected together, because when one chants japa, one both chants and hears, right? You're going to shravanam, kirtanam, both together. And that leads naturally to remembrance. And so, particularly, it's advised by acharyas that one should hear the pastimes of Krishna regularly and then try to remember those. And that's just like a very, very simple technique. In other words, we hear something and we try to remember it. Or we hear some philosophy and try to remember it through the day and how that applies to our life, right? In other words, basically any way that we can remember Krishna, attach him more in our mind, make him part of our life. And not just in the morning and maybe somebody, but you know, throughout the whole day. Now, of course, in the beginning, that's fine. This is the practice and proper to say that. You start the morning program, you hear, you chant your rounds, then you're Krishna conscious throughout the day, because, especially if you're doing service for Krishna, because that service for Krishna is also non-different and also helps us to remember Krishna. But I guess what I'm saying is we need to bring it more and more to the conscious level. In other words, not just expect, oh, Krishna will do it automatically for us. Yes, but the more conscious we come, it's called Krishna consciousness after all, the more Krishna conscious we become, the more the process will work, right? And the more enjoyment we'll get from it, the more internal realization we'll get from it, and we'll just, it just becomes a spontaneous thing that one wants to perform Krishna consciousness. One wants to hear about Krishna, hear the philosophy, hear the pastimes, and repeat them to others. So it's a natural process, and it develops from this beautiful process we have of sadhana that's actually given to us by the acharyas, Rupa Goswami specifically, the different processes in Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu. And the Prabhupada has very, very faithfully brought to us. And then we just need to apply it more and more to every aspect of our life, if possible. Okay, thank you very much. I'm over time, I think. Hare Krishna. All glories to Prabhupada. Any quick questions? Forgotten it?
Thank you, Prabhu. So Prabhupada said, first deserve, then desire. Mm. Was this?
Oh, he said first desire, then deserve.
I thought he said first deserve, then desire.
Yeah.
In our sannyas college, they train. You act like a sannyasi, then you think of becoming sannyasi.
I've always heard it, first deserve, then desire. Right?
Let's see if I can find it, because I actually took it and copied it right from a quote or a conversation.
In any case...
In any, desire and deserve. We need both, yeah.
Was he referring to spiritual desires or material desires? And if,
My understanding is spiritual. We're talking about spiritual desire primarily here. I mean, it could work with material desire, but that's not what Prabhupada was really indicating. So you're understanding which way first?
First deserve, and then you can desire. First qualify yourself, or something like that, right?
Act like a sannyasi, and then you desire to fulfill the get sannyasi.
Okay.
It means desire first.
But then the action to do that has to have a desire first.
Correct.
In other words, without the desire, nothing would happen, and there'd be nothing to deserve. So I don't know. I think you could put it either way, and it works philosophically. Okay, I'll check that out again.
I really appreciate you mentioned three times, maybe more, the importance of connection to consciousness. Repeatedly, and in sadhan bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti, this is all suddha bhakti, but then you say sadhan bhakti has a bidhi mark and rag mark. But I was thinking, like when Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Prabhupada's conversation, in summarizing that, Prabhupada said, give one life, this life.
Yeah.
And if you are lacking, Mahaprabhu will fulfill that. And I was thinking, but Tamal Krishna Maharaj's point was, I'm so busy I don't even think of Krishna or chanting. But then you made a very nice connection. I really appreciate that you said, it's not really external or internal, it's a consciousness, how you're connecting, it's for who you're doing.
Yeah.
So it's very nice, thank you. That was very, like a puzzle, like kind of a linked it. Very nice, thank you.
You know, I didn't get to it, and probably Krishna didn't want me really to talk about it. But the last thing I had here was Jiva Goswami describes two forms of bhakti in the purport to Bhakti-rasamrita-sindhu 1.1.11, you know, the famous one, Anyabhi-lasati-shunyam. He says there's two forms of bhakti, in the bhava-rupa and the chaste-rupa. And mostly what we do is the chaser rupta bhakti. That's the active form. We use our body, our words, and mind, and that's what Srila Prabhupada taught us, the practical use of the senses, yukta vairagya. But there's also the internal stage, the emotional form called bhava-rupa, and that comes at a higher stage, primarily. But from what I understand of reading a little more about this, it begins. It can begin even if we're not at the stage of bhava, in lower stages. You start to get, like ruchi, we get a little appreciation, a little taste, and then it becomes, so eventually the service is also internal as well as external. But Prabhupada pretty much emphasized, activity in Krishna consciousness, because we're all neophyte, and we have to keep our senses and our body and our mind, absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And we also have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission to perform and fulfill. So both things. I got a little off there.
Let me try to take away from what you're saying. Very, very nice, very nice. I'm sure everybody will be appreciating this. So you are saying that Jiva Goswami Pad saying that in order performing sadhana bhakti, there's two components. One is chastarupa, one is bhavarupa. Mm-hmm. Chastarupa means action, activities.
Yeah.
And mood, proper mood has to be there, intention. But even if I don't have a proper mood or I cannot, but still if I act on it, eventually it will lead, develop that.
Yeah.
Very nice point too. Very, very wonderful.
Yeah, we can't artificially jump ahead.
Correct.
That becomes sahajiya. Sahajiya is like acting like you're at a more advanced position than you really are, right? In a sense, I mean, that's one way of looking at it. In other words, I act like I am, a peacock in Vrindavan or something when, I can barely follow the regular principles, that. I remember we had one woman who used to come to the temple all the time, I won't mention her name, and I think she was with another group, another Indian sadhu, and that's all I'll say. And I was giving class and she asked a question. She said, well, shouldn't we be thinking about Radharani and what she thinks and what she feels? And I said, well, that would be a very nice meditation. I said, now, I happen to know this woman had just stopped taking drugs, about a month ago, and then she got initiated, of course, immediately. And I was thinking, this is so far beyond the neophytes. So I just said, that's very nice if you can do that. I said, that's kind of beyond me. I just try to follow Srila Prabhupada's process, So, we can't... I think your point that I was trying to elaborate on is that it's a natural process of evolution of our consciousness, in a sense. From Vaidhi, Raganuga develops. And Prabhupada's talked about that. He mentions that. And he mentions it in Nectar Devotion, in the chapters. It starts out, the way Rupa Goswami sets up Nectar Devotion, he first talks about Vaidhi, right? Then he talks about Ragatnika and Raganuga. Then he talks about Bhava. Then he talks about Prema. And then the rest of the book is all pretty much ecstatic manifestations in the at the Prema stage, right? So most of us, what they call it, first 18 chapters or something, most of us sort of focus on those earlier chapters because it's a little more, to our level of realization, where he goes through all of the processes and like that. So what was my point? Oh, my point was Prabhupada talked about, some of those... chapters about Raghunath, the same thing, about how this will develop and like that. So, and Prabhupada gives an example, right? Earlier in Nectar Devotion, he says, in the beginning, a student wakes up because the alarm goes off, and to follow the orders of spiritual master, he gets up, watching, chances, rounds like that. He said, then later, when one gets more in the Raghunatha stage, then one spontaneously wants to get up, wants to chant, wants to, in other words, he's still doing the practices, but with the internal desires there. Because there's an internal taste is developing, an attraction. Actually, it's kind of the beginning of Ruchi and Ashakti, isn't it? There's some taste, there's some attachment to the action, to the practices of Krishna consciousness. Hearing, chanting, remembering. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Tirupakamper?
Haribol, you got an easy verse today and I got a difficult one yesterday.
you got all the demigod worship.
So
I got 2 points, but let me deal with one at a time. Lord Krishna says, I'm within the heart of everyone, and as soon as one desires to worship a particular demigod, I direct him towards that demigod and make his faith strong. Mm-hmm. Can you?
I think it's really part of the same point. What everyone's desire is, you know, Krishna will fulfill that. And doesn't he describe this? Is it 15:15 Bhagavad Gita where he talks about how the super soul is directing everybody and directing the wanderings, even of the animals, of all living entities? It's kind of like 15:15, really nice purport. Prabhupada talks about that point, yeah. I mean, Prabhupada's directing everyone to what they want.
I've seen in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned about the pitris. It's stated that the moon, one month on earth is one day on the moon. Two weeks is like a dark part of the moon, and 2 weeks is the bright part of the moon.
Yeah.
It's stated also, 2 weeks of the pitris, or 14 days on earth, is one day for the pitris, and the other 14 days is one night. And then elsewhere it's mentioned that actually the pitris live on the moon.
Okay.
You know, I mean, just for information purpose, I just bring this up. Really. The pitris live on the moon. But you know, why I speak this to, like, and the scientists say there's no being on the moon, you know?
Yeah.
It's an interesting point.
Well, there's Chandra, Soma, the moon god is there. Anyway. By the way, I have no comment on that because I really don't know a lot about this like you do.
So you mentioned all of these prosperity religions and other methods of attaining their material amenities that people want. So if one is restricted by his karma, he'll get only what his past karma dictates.
Mm-hmm.
So, theoretically, if one just, you know, sat at home and didn't do anything, wouldn't whatever was going to come by his hard labor come anyway?
More or less. Yeah, although the way karma works, it also directs our activity. So part of the karma might be that one would do all of this activity to gain that. You know what I mean? It's very complex, I think. Prabhupada says reactions and actions are very difficult to understand. You know, it's such a complex interaction. So I think even if I didn't really make an effort, I mean, some things happen, like people win lotteries or they get inheritances. They don't do anything and they get stuck. Yeah, that happens. But it is true that I think that sometimes, you know, Krishna also directs people to certain activities according to those desires. Mm-hmm. So I think both are there.
Yeah.
But the point is, what is the point? It's all foolishness, useless, all those things Prabhupada said.
And it's all calculated, it's not accidental.
Yeah.
Because I remember we were discussing.
It's all, yeah.
There's the one astrologer, part of the Bhagavad Gita goes to Bhrigu Maa, I don't know if you ever heard.
Hmm.
She came to Nalini Kandapur's house a couple of times.
Who?
Briguma.
Sneha.
Yeah, her name is Sneha. Briguma. I met her also in Nalini Kandapur's house once.
Mm.
She's a famous astrologer. So I remember I had a talk about that, how this lady from Argentina is a maid in a lawyer's house. And then she called and said, I'm not coming anymore because I got the super lotto.
Won the lottery?
Yeah.
Oh.
$72 million.
Oh.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, who needs spiritual life then if you win the lottery, right? Is that her thinking?
So then she made a very good sense because I took her to a park near my house in San Diego called Cage Session Park. And the lady who owned it before, she donated this to the city.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can just use it. So she gave this analogy that this lady gave
this park, and it's a beautiful park, really, has a vision, a mission view, and very nice, I remember that. She said, if you charge $1 per entrance, monthly, $1, how many people would get? I said, oh, I would get probably over 100,000, because I know, I used to live nearby, how many thousands of people come. So just imagine, just by donating this, how much actually accumulation she has. So one life, person who donated this, one life she will get this super lotto type of gift. Mm. And people will think, she didn't do anything, how did she get this? No, it's not a didn't do anything. She gave up her park, donated mm-hmm. to the public benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, everything is calculated, nothing is accidental.
Right. Yeah, and sometimes we think, how did this person get all this? We don't know what they did in their last lifetime either, right? Because it's not just this lifetime, it's from previous lifetimes as well. Anyway, I think Prabhupada's point that he tells us over and over is just get out of all of this. Don't get implicated in good karma, bad karma, three mode of goodness, mode of passion, ignorance. Anything else? Okay, one more in the back, and then we should probably end class.
In the news last week, there was a little bit about consciousness regarding artificial intelligence. Google has produced a chat bot, you know, that can carry on a pretty good conversation with a person. And so it came up like the engineer was saying, we have produced consciousness. So I believe he got fired over it. But anyway, Prabhupada says, if I remember correctly, that consciousness is the symptom of the soul. So we have jiva and atma, you know, terms within our literature. What about for consciousness? Is there a term, specific term for consciousness?
Yeah, chetan.
What'd you say?
And then if you wanted to comment on whether you believe, whether consciousness can ever be produced like they're talking about by
wasn't there just a recent thing about that somebody said a computer had achieved consciousness? You know, they had such an advanced program that, well, the thing is, obviously that's probably not possible, but if it did, that means somehow an Atma or a Jiva had entered in the computer body. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but I guess it could happen, you know. But, you know. Oh, but what was the question about consciousness? It was,
in Sanskrit, it's called Chetan.
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 Oh, Chetan, yeah.
Chetan. Like
the living force, Chaitanya.
Chitta is heart.
Yeah.
And Chetana comes from Chitta.
Yeah.
The heart produces the consciousness.
Right,
it's coming
right.
From the soul.
Yeah, that's a good word.
It doesn't come from the body, it doesn't come from the mind, it comes from the soul.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of other terms too, can related ideas. You know, there's so much, it gets quite complex sometimes. But, yeah. Any other ideas on that?
Well, I have a little contradictory.
If someone said, you said in the beginning of the class, many paths leads to many destiny, not same destiny. But what if somebody say, well, many paths can lead to the same destiny as long they know what the destiny is. Because in your Hare Krishna society, some people join and they take celibate life, they go straight to the sannyas and want to get out. Somebody get married, get divorced, get married, go 3-4 times, maybe many paths looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But they all reach to the ultimate destiny because they do know destiny.
Yeah.
So it's like a little bit.
Yeah, but it is how fast do you want to go too? How many lifetimes do you want to take? And, you know, just like I said, you could take the kind of like the wrong transportation with all the stops along the way. You're headed for the right destination, but you're getting diverted here and there. So in other words, there we want to take the more direct path. Impossible, you know. Okay, I think we should stop. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.